Ever heard of a legal case that's kind of like a constitutional earthquake? One that we're still feeling the aftershocks of today.
Sounds intense. Which case are we talking about?
Myers v. United States. That's our deep dive for today. A case that totally reshaped the balance of power between the president and Congress.
Myers, that's a big one, yeah. You don't hear that name every day. But it's really relevant, even in the 21st century, not just some dusty old case.
So why does a case from 1926 still matter today? What are the long-term impacts we're seeing?
Well, think about modern agencies like the FTC or the CFPB. Their structure, their independence, a lot of that goes back to Myers. There are still court battles about how independent those agencies can be and those arguments. Yeah, they often go all the way back to the showdown in 26.
Okay, so color me intrigued. Help me set the stage here. We've got Frank S. Myers, a postmaster fired by President Woodrow Wilson, and a law from 1876 stuck in the middle. What was happening in America back then? Post-World War I, what was the scene?
Okay, so picture this. America's stepping onto the world stage, the federal government's expanding like crazy, and there's this tension brewing. Who's really calling the shots in this growing bureaucracy, right? You've got Woodrow Wilson as president, a guy known for, shall we say, wanting a strong executive branch. Lots of questions about his authority, about how far Congress could reach.
Okay, I'm seeing the setting. Now zoom in on Frank S. Myers. Was he some big political player? How did Postmaster end up in the middle of this constitutional storm?
Not a big name, actually. He was a first-class postmaster in Portland, Oregon, appointed by President Wilson. Pretty standard stuff. But then things get interesting. The Wilson administration decides to fire Myers before his term's up, and get this, they do it without asking the Senate for permission.
Oh, that's where the 1876 law comes in, right? It specifically said the president needed the Senate's okay to remove certain officials. Postmasters were on that list. Talk about a recipe for a power struggle. So what does Myers do?
He felt wronged, obviously. So he did what anyone in his position would do. Sued for his unpaid salary, his argument. The 1876 Act, he says it's constitutional. They fired him illegally. He wants his back pay. It went to the Court of Claims, lost there initially, and that's how we ended up with a Supreme Court showdown.
So this whole thing boils down to one fundamental question.
Yeah.
Who has the power to fire executive branch officials, the president or Congress? Those were some huge implications, right?
Absolutely huge. This case cuts to the core of Article 2 of the Constitution, the one outlining presidential powers. There's this thing called the Take Care Clause, which says the president must take care that the laws be faithfully executed. Sounds pretty simple, right? Well, not really. This little phrase has fueled endless debates about how much authority the president actually has.
Okay, I can see how the Take Care Clause is like open to interpretation. So break down the arguments for me. What was each side saying to the Supreme Court?
Myers, his side, argues that the 1876 Act, the one that required Senate consent for removal, was totally constitutional. Basically, Congress passed the law, president's got to follow it, but the government. They countered with the classic separation of powers argument. They said giving the Senate that much power over firings would step on the president's toes, make it harder to do his job, Wouldn't be able to run things effectively.
So it was a battle of legal titans, huh? The president's inherent power versus Congress's lawmaking power.
Yeah.
So how did this high-stakes duel end? What was the Supreme Court's verdict?
It was a landmark decision. The Supreme Court sided with the president big time. Chief Justice Taft wrote the majority opinion, and he argued that Article 2 gives the president broad power to remove executive officers. No need to check with the Senate. He even went way back to the first Congress in 1789 to show that this presidential power was always there.
So Taft was using historical precedent. Was he basically saying, this is what the founding fathers intended, this is how they wanted it to work?
Exactly. Taft was like, look, the president needs to pick his team and remove people to get things done. He even said that requiring Senate approval would destroy the unity and responsibility of the executive department.
Yeah, you can kind of see the logic there. Like, imagine you're a coach, can't decide who's on your team, chaos. But a decision this big, someone must have disagreed. Were any of the justices concerned about this?
You're right. There were two powerful dissents. Justice Holmes and Justice Brandeis, they weren't happy with this ruling, and their dissents are important, even today. They highlight the dangers of too much executive power, which you know, something people still worry about.
Okay, so what were their specific worries? Why did they disagree?
Well, Holmes focused on this difference between officers and inferior officers. He was saying Congress could limit the president's power to remove some lower-level officials. Didn't think everyone in the executive branch had to answer directly to the president. Basically, he was advocating for checks and balances even within the executive branch itself.
Interesting. And what about Brandeis? Different perspective.
Brandeis went the historical route. He pointed out that Congress had been regulating the removal of officials for a long time. And that, he argued, showed that the president's power wasn't absolute. He was afraid this decision would give the president too much power, lead to overreach. He was basically saying, we've got this history of checks and balances, let's not just throw that away.
So even back then, they were sounding the alarm, like, hey, what about abuse of power? It doesn't sound like this debate is over. Like, is the president's power really unlimited?
Not even close. This tension, you know, between a strong executive branch and the need for checks and balances, it's like a theme in American history. And Myers v. United States, it's a landmark because it laid the groundwork for so many future battles over this same question. It's still shaping how we think about presidential power even today.
I have a feeling we've only scratched the surface here. So what happened next? Did Myers just fade away, or did it have some ripple effects? We'll find out in part two of our deep dive into Myers v. United States. Welcome back to the deep dive. We're picking up where we left off, still digging into Myers v. United States. This case, it's like it started this whole chain reaction of legal battles over presidential power.
Yeah, it really did.
So we've got this ruling that gives the president a lot of authority to remove people from the executive branch. But then we have Holmes and Brandeis with their warnings about what could happen if the president has too much power. Did anyone even listen to them? Or did Myers just lead to a bunch of problems later on?
Oh, people definitely listen. Myers didn't just disappear. It's like a super important case cited all the time in these legal fights over presidential authority. It really did set the stage for presidents having a lot of leeway when it comes to firing executive officers.
Okay, but what about those dissenting opinions? Holmes and Brandeis worried about unchecked power. Did those concerns have any impact, or did they just, like, fade away?
They had a huge impact. Those dissents, they basically predicted a lot of the legal challenges that came later. They shaped how people interpreted and applied Myers in the years that followed. It's like they planted these seeds of doubt, and those doubts turned into new legal arguments.
I'm following you. So how did Myers actually play out in real life? Give me an example of how those seeds of doubt you're talking about sprouted into actual legal challenges.
Okay, so fast forward to 1935. We've got this case, Humphrey's Executor v. United States. It was about the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC. The whole point of the FTC was to be kind of independent, not under the president's thumb.
Ah, so this is where those independent agencies start coming in, the ones Holmes and Brandeis were worried about. Was Humphrey's Executor basically trying to overturn Myers? Or did the court figure out a way to make these two ideas work together?
It's interesting. In Humphrey's Executor, the Supreme Court made a distinction. They said, look, you've got purely executive officers like that postmaster in Myers, and then you've got officials who are doing quasi-legislative or quasi-judicial stuff, like the folks on the FTC. And they ruled that the president's power to remove people wasn't absolute when it came to these more independent officials.
So it's like Humphrey's Executor created a loophole, an exception to the rule Myers had established.
Exactly. It acknowledged that some officials need some breathing room. They need to be independent from the president so they can do their jobs right, especially if they're involved in regulating things or making judgments.
Makes sense. And this reminds me of those modern agencies we talked about, like the CFPB. Are these newer cases still dealing with the fallout from Myers? Is it still shaping legal arguments about how those agencies are structured and how independent they could be?
Oh, yeah, totally. Myers and Humphrey's Executor, they created this framework for thinking about presidential removal power, but they also left some gray areas. And those gray areas, they're still being debated in court today.
Okay, I need a real-world example. How is Myers actually playing out in today's legal system? How are courts applying these old precedents to modern agencies?
All right, perfect example. The 2020 case, CLA Law v. Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the one you mentioned earlier, the CFPB was set up with a single director. And this director, they could only be removed by the president for cause, meaning there had to be a specific reason, like they weren't doing their job or they did something wrong.
So they were trying to give the CFPB director more independence,
yeah,
right? Protect them from political pressure. Did it work? Did the Supreme Court agree with that setup?
Nope. In a 5-4 decision, they ruled that limiting the president's removal power, like that violated the separation of powers. They leaned heavily on Myers, said the president needs to be able to control the executive branch to make sure everyone's accountable.
Wow, so almost 100 years later, and Myers is still a big deal. It's wild how one case can have so much influence, but I guess I still don't get why it matters so much. Why all this fuss about who can fire who in the government?
It's all about accountability and control. Who's really in charge? The president is supposed to be the head of the executive branch, right? They're ultimately responsible for making sure laws are followed. But if Congress can create agencies that the president can't really oversee, well, then it gets kind of tricky for the president to do their job.
I see that. But if the president can just fire anyone who disagrees with them, doesn't that mean these agencies might become too political? Like, they're supposed to act in the public interest? What if they're too worried about getting fired to actually do that?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? It's this constant balancing act, trying to make sure the president has enough power to be held accountable, while also making sure these agencies can actually function independently and do what they're supposed to do for the public.
So what's the bottom line here? Any big takeaways from Myers and all this legal back and forth?
The biggest thing is this. Myers said that the president needs a lot of control over the executive branch. They can't do their job without it. But it's not that simple. There are exceptions, like we saw with Humphrey's executor. It's complicated, and courts are still trying to figure out where the lines are.
So this push and pull between presidential power and checks and balances, it's still going on.
It's never really stopped.
Why should the average person care about all this? Why does it matter?
Great question. Because these cases, they're not just about legal mumbo-jumbo. They're about power, about who has it and how it's used. They're about accountability. The next time you hear about some fight over an independent agency or someone challenging a presidential appointment or an argument about executive power, remember Myers, it's probably lurking somewhere in the background. These questions about how our government works, who's really calling the shots, they matter. They affect all of us.
This has been a fascinating deep dive. I feel like we've uncovered so much history. Is there more to this story?
There is. In the final part, we're going to jump into even more recent cases, ones that are still grappling with the legacy of Myers. We'll look at how courts are trying to balance executive power and accountability in a world that's changing so fast. New challenges popping up all the time.
Sounds like I can't miss it. Join us for the last part of this deep dive as we unpack the lasting impact of Myers v. United States. Welcome back to the deep dive. We're wrapping up our look at Myers v. United States, a case that seems to have caused like decades of legal arguments. You mentioned that there are some recent cases still wrestling with this. What's been happening in the courts these days?
It's been pretty wild, actually. The Supreme Court's been dealing with cases that directly challenge the limits of what the president can do. And you know what? Myers often ends up right in the middle of those fights.
Okay, so walk me through one of those cases. What's a good example of how Myers is still shaping legal arguments today? Give me a front row seat.
All right, let's look at Free Enterprise Fund v. Public Company Accounting Oversight Board. It's from 2010. The case was about the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board, the PCAOB for short.
Catchy name.
Right. So Congress created the PCAOB to keep an eye on the accounting firms that audit public companies. It's all about accountability.
Okay, so another independent agency. Makes sense. So what was the problem? Where does Myers fit in?
Well, PCAOB members, they were appointed by the SEC. And get this, the SEC commissioners themselves. The president could only remove them for cause, so like only for a really good reason.
So it's like double protection from the president.
Exactly, a double layer. And that sounds kind of familiar, right? Kind of like what we saw with Myers.
Yeah, it does. Did the Supreme Court shut it down?
They did. The court ruled that this double layer of protection, it violated the separation of powers. They basically said it went too far. Like it made the PCAOB too independent. So independent that the president couldn't really control the executive branch the way they're supposed to.
So basically, Myers is being used to stop agencies from getting too independent from the president. Are there any other recent cases like this? Is this happening a lot?
It's definitely a recurring theme. CELA Law v. Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Remember that one? For 2020.
Yeah, we talked about it earlier.
So the CFPB director, they could only be removed for cause, too. And the Supreme Court said, nope, that's not okay. Same issue, separation of powers.
So it's like the Supreme Court is saying, don't mess with the president's power to fire people.
Yeah.
But why is this such a big deal? I still don't totally get why it matters so much who gets fired by whom.
Think of it this way. The president, they're in charge of the whole executive branch, right? Their job is to make sure the laws are actually being followed. It's about accountability. But if Congress can just create all these agencies that the president can't really oversee, then it becomes really hard for the president to do their job.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. But what about the flip side? What if the president can just fire anyone they don't like? Doesn't that mean these agencies are just going to become political puppets? Like, they're supposed to be independent, they're supposed to act in the best interest of the people. How can they do that if they're always worried about getting fired?
That's the heart of the debate right there. It's this constant struggle to find the right balance. We need to make sure the president can be held accountable, but we also need to make sure these agencies can do their jobs without feeling political pressure. It's a tough one.
So where do we stand now after all these years of legal battles? What's the situation today when it comes to this whole presidential removal power thing?
Well, Myers v. United States, it's still a really important case. It established this basic idea that the president needs to have a good amount of control over the executive branch. If they can't remove people, they can't really run the government effectively. But there are limits. Humphrey's executor showed us that. It's not like the president has absolute power. It's a complex issue, and the courts are still trying to figure out all the details.
And it sounds like the Supreme Court is still actively involved in defining those boundaries. Like with cases like Free Enterprise Fund and CELA Law, they're still trying to find that sweet spot between power and accountability.
That's right. This whole debate over who the president can fire, it's not over. It's going to keep going on for a long time, probably. Our government's always changing, facing new challenges, and the courts are going to have to keep grappling with these questions. How much power should the president have? And how do we make sure there's accountability and balance in our political system, even as things keep changing?
So, listeners, the next time you hear about some legal challenge to an agency or a debate about someone the president wants to appoint, think about Myers v. United States. Those cases might seem boring or technical, but they really matter. They affect how our government works, how power is divided up, who's really in charge.
And I think the most important thing to remember is this. We all have a role to play in this. We need to stay informed. We need to talk about these issues. And we need to hold our elected officials accountable for the choices they make about how our government works. It affects all of us.
That's a great point. This has been a fascinating deep dive. Thank you for taking us through this all the way back to Myers v. United States. It's amazing how much impact this one case has had on our country's legal and political systems.
It's been my pleasure. And remember, keep learning, keep asking those tough questions, and keep exploring. The world of law and government is full of fascinating stuff.
And that's a wrap on this episode of The Deep Dive. Until next time, keep those brains buzzing.